This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Earlier in May, the World Meteorological Organization reported that there is increasing likelihood that El Niño will occur this year, bringing with it the possibility of drought and higher temperatures in already a very erratic climate thanks to climate change. Malaysians now, even at this moment, are already complaining about the extreme hot weather, the lack of rain, and along with that, the haze as well. So when El Niño come, all of this will inevitably have knock-on effects on our agricultural sector and thus food security as well. So joining me to discuss the impact of El Niño and climate change and how we can build a more resilient and self-sustaining system is Noorfitri Amir Muhammad, researcher and coordinator with the Malaysian Food Sovereignty Forum, also known as Forum Kedaulatan Makanan Malaysia. Thank you so much for joining me today, Amir. Our pleasure. Now, maybe we can start with a bit of the basics, right, to get our listeners familiar with our topic. How would you explain to people what food security or insecurity is?
All right. So the definition of food security is when all people, you know, at all time have physical and economic access. Physical access and also economic access mean affordable, mm-hmm. To sufficient, safe and nutritious food that meets their food preferences, yeah, for everyday life, for healthy life. So that's the definitions of food security. So if you are food insecure, mm-hmm. so it is the opposite. So at one moment or one time, you doesn't have access to foods, or the food is not affordable, or there are foods, they are affordable, but the food is not nutritious, or the food is not your preference. So all that is considered food insecure.
Mm-hmm. Now, based on that definition, then, you know, how would you say Malaysia is doing when it comes to food security? Are we food secure or insecure?
You know, usually government will use the indicator of trade, yeah, to look whether we are food secure or not. You know, like the agro food total import versus export. You know, our total import is around 51.3 billion, yeah, mm-hmm. and total export is around 31.7 billion ringgit. So it is a trade deficit, yeah, around 19.6 billion, yeah. So this is a general picture of the economic value of agri food. It is for the government to justify whether it is worth it or not worth it. Government to pay attention to this sector. But, you know, actually, food security, as we discussed earlier in the definition, you know, this total import and export does not show the level of availability of food, the level of accessibility, you know, the level of stability and also utilization. If I can explain further, there are actually three indicators to measure the food security. So these three indicators is actually based on the school of thought. You know, what is your school of thought on food security? So this is what many people actually confuse. Even the policymaker confused with these indicators, you know, how to use these indicators. And also researchers in research institution. So the number one is Global Food Security Index. This is the most popular Global Food Security Index. Mm-hmm. It is a ranking system, actually. You will rank. So in Global Food Security Index, this year in 2022, Malaysia is at number 41. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Singapore is at number 28. I mean the first in Southeast Asia, Singapore, mm-hmm. 28. Thailand is below us at 64, and Vietnam is 46. Yeah. Mm. So this is Global Food Security Index. The second one to the indicator to measure food security is a self-sufficient ratio or a self-sufficient level, SSL. Self-sufficient level is at what percentage we produce our foods within the country. You know, for example, rice in 2021, based on the statistics, we produce 65% ourselves. Yeah? 35% we import lah. Beef 18.9. This is the lower SSL. Mutton 10%, 10.7%. So the higher subscription level, we got chicken at 99.9%, almost 100%,
mm-hmm.
and also fish, almost 100%. You know, and egg 11% and 14%. Meaning, if we are producing more, the subscription level is more than 100%. We can export. That's the meaning lah. So the third one,
mm-hmm.
to measure food security is FAO, Food Agriculture Organization, which is a UN agency,
mm-hmm.
a food security indicator. So they will produce this report in 3 years' time. So now, 2022, the new report have been published lah. Eh? So food security indicator 2022, this FAO food security indicator is not a ranking. It's not ranking. It is just an indicator to show the prevalence in the population, the prevalence of undernourishment, how many percent, the prevalence of hunger, the prevalence of severe food insecurity, how many percent, the prevalence of stunting in children, the prevalence of obesity in adults. So that show that the food that we consume is not health. Yeah? So if the obesity is higher,
mm-hmm.
so we are not food secure, yeah? Because the health factor, the food that we consume is not healthy. So like in 2022, the prevalence of undernourishment in our population is 2.5%. You know? The prevalence of severe food insecurity is 6.3%.
Mm-hmm.
Stunting in children, 20.9%. So there's a lot of indicator in this FAO food security indicator. So there are three indicator to measure our food security, and each one is actually referring to different school of thought in food security. I will talk about it later. Yeah.
Mm. So based on all of this, is Malaysia doing okay?
For me, we are doing okay, but we can improve much more. We should improve much more, especially on rice, because rice is our
staple
food. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we should get 100% in rice self-sufficient level. So if I can mention here, mm-hmm. you know, there are three type of there are three school of thought in food security.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, we got money, we can buy anything, including food lah. Yeah. Mm. So do not focus too much on production. You focus just focusing on your economy. You know, if people get money, if people get ability to spend, then you are considered food secure.
Mm.
So this is what Global Food Security Index is. You know.
I see.
They are actually measuring the ability of the country to access food.
Mm-hmm.
So it is based on open market.
Mm.
You know, the irony of Global Food Security Index is, you know, Singapore is at number one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony is Singapore is only produce 10% of its food need.
Mm-hmm.
So how come Singapore got at the first place? Eh? So
because they can afford to spend.
Yeah. Thailand
mm-hmm.
Is lower than us
mm-hmm.
In the Global Food Security Index, but we import rice from Thailand. And also we import rice from Vietnam. So this is the conflict. You know, when people talk about look, we should be like Singapore,
mm-hmm.
They got higher Global Food Security Index, then we say, look, we need to import almost 35% of our rice. What should we do? Yeah? So if actually if we are wanting to follow Singapore, is actually we doesn't need to think about SSL anymore. You know, we just import everything.
Mm-hmm.
We just liberalize all our trades. You know, zero tariff, agriculture tariff is zero, no import quota. That is actually the weightage in Global Food Security Index is almost 10%. The 10%, the variable, the weightage almost 10% for the point. You know, so we actually can achieve higher ranking of Global Food Security Index. But when we think about it deeper, it is good for Singapore because they got no farmers to protect. So if we liberalize our borders, people can easily import. Then our farmers will be in trouble because the market, they will kacau the market lah. So that's why when we speak about SSL, we should not refer to Global Food Security Index because SSL is a different concept. So SSL is the second school of thought in the food security. The second school of thought is we need to be self-sufficient. So we produce our own food. So that is the second thought of food security. Yeah. So we do not depend on import. So we need the food security is becoming national security. So whatever amount of money that you should spend on the food security, you should not calculate it in the economics sense lah. There is no profit or loss lah, because everything is actually for national security. And the third school of thought is when your country is poor and you cannot produce your own food, so other people need to help you. So the third school of thought, came from the form of food aid, like countries in Africa. The food aid is actually become the measurement of food security for them. So we need to be very careful when we talk about policies in food security. We need to have this understanding of the difference indicator for different users.
So what is Malaysia struggling with then when it comes to ensuring our food security? Because we have, like you said, Amir, a lot of quite a big number of farmers, especially small farmers across the country, right? Where are we struggling? Is it a matter of we are not producing enough because we are still importing food, or is it because people cannot afford the food that we produce?
Yeah, so Malaysia is not very bad. We do not have famine here. We do not have civil unrest, the level, the problem that we have when there are food shortage is higher price for the consumer. So that's the problem, So this is a food insecurity at the family level or at an individual level. So when you look at food security, you need to look at what level we are talking about, whether it is in the national level or whether it is at the family level. So when you talk about food security in the national level, usually we will use a self-sufficient level, the SSL. So if we achieve 100% SSL in our main food, we can consider ourselves as food secure. But we should look further in the family level and individual level. So those who can't afford it are the ones who are facing food insecurity at personal level. So in this case, we should look at the FAO indicator. Yeah, the FAO indicator is very important lah for the government to plan for intervention. You should look at the number of undernourishment, 2.5%. So 2.5% out of 35 million is many.
It's a lot,
It's a lot. So where is this person? You need to check back at the statistic where these people are, So to give government intervention like subsidy, targeted subsidy is important, for this person, the children who are stunting, children, wasting in children, also obesity. You know, obesity is also a problem because government need to look at whether the food received by this population, whether it's healthy or not. You know, sometimes they just feel they feel full, they are not hungry, but the food that they eat is actually make them sick. Yeah.
All right, we do have to go for a quick break now, Amir, and then but when we come back, we'll dive into the impact of El Nino on our agricultural sector, on our farmers here in Malaysia. On the show with me today is Nur Fitri Amir Mohamad, researcher and coordinator with the Malaysian Food Sovereignty Forum, also known as FKMM. And we are discussing the impact of El Nino on food security in Malaysia. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Su Ann. On the show with me today is Nur Fitri Amir Mohamad, researcher and coordinator with the Malaysia Food Sovereignty Forum, and he is joining me to discuss food security in Malaysia. Now, before the break, we were going through the basics of food security, what it means, and how Malaysia is doing when it comes to food security. And, well, Amir says we're doing fairly all right, but there are areas that we can improve, and that's what we want to dive into later on in this segment. But first, you know, we also want to discuss the impact of El Nino, which the World Meteorological Organization has said that it's very likely that it will happen this year. Now, El Nino is a weather pattern that happens every 2 to 7 years. It usually brings warmer air and typically drought to this region of the world, to Asia and Southeast Asia. Now, Amir, how will that weather pattern during El Nino impact our agricultural sector, our farmers here in Malaysia?
So El Nino, we need to understand that this is actually, El Nino is not new. It's not a new phenomenon.
It's been happening.
An ancient phenomenon. You know, the name itself, El Nino, is not given by scientists. It's given by fishermen. You know? The fishermen's name, the phenomenon El Nino. And then in our modern time, scientists start to study it. So they see a pattern, you know, they see a pattern. So in 2 or 7 years, we will get this so-called El Nino Southern Oscillation. Eh? That's the full name, eh? ENSO. Eh? So this phenomenon is actually the fluctuation of ocean temperature. El Nino brings both actually negative and positive effect, depending on your geographical location, you know. So like we in the South Asia, we will feel dry and hot weather. Eh? But in south of South America, they will get more rain. So El Nino is not just hot, but some part of the world is rain. Eh? It's raining season. So we need to understand that. So, for example, when I say it is also positive, yeah. So fish in the hot water ocean area is actually migrating to places where the temperature is lower. Eh? So the supply of fish will be higher during El Nino. Yeah, in that particular places lah. So that's a positive thing lah. Then the negative thing is, of course, those people live in the area where it get hotter, and then said the crop is dying, less water. So that will affect their economy. So having said that, so this phenomenon is actually can be predicted. You know, like now, the international community, the scientists have predicted El Nino is will happen. They say it's next month, yeah, June, yeah. So, you know, your question is, what is the observation on the ground? Yeah? So, firstly, you know, farmers in Malaysia, especially rice farmers, yeah, they actually already noticed change in the climate schedule. You know, so this is not El Nino. This is just our normal monsoon, yeah, monsoon cycle. So the rainy season at the end of the last year is actually much longer. The rain is much longer. You know, the rice farmers actually experience flood more often. You know, some farmers experience 2 times of flood, you know, 3 times of flood.
Wow.
So the losses already occurred. Yeah, in the ground. So other thing that happened is actually, I don't know what to in English how to say it. It's the tanah lembik lah. I mean, jerlos. I mean the soil is jerlos. You know. Mm-hmm. So the machine cannot come in to harvest. So this has become a problem. So, and it's already actually started to reduce our production of rice because of this rainy season. Yeah. So the harvesting machine that we use at the moment is actually large. No, it is actually for overseas, for corn and wheat. Yeah. So the rice field is actually need a smaller machine. Because the nature of the land is wet, no. So now in Kedah, now it is a new planting schedule has entered, no. In the dry season, you know, the amount of water is limited. No, the water has been released from the dam, you know, but the condition of the water irrigation is actually not well maintained. And what makes it worse is the less water from dam. So the water is actually dries up before reaching to the paddy field.
Oh no!
So this is a maintenance issue, lah. Mm. Yeah. So the hot water is actually cause farmers to limit their time, their working time in the field. Yeah. Because my friends, you know, when I ask, tak pergi kebun, tak pergi bendang ke? Mm. So they said balik awal. So they usually we balik awal lah. Because it's too hot, yeah. Mm. Because it's too hot, yeah. So it is same for fruit and vegetables. So this is before El Nino. This is just a normal angin monsoon berat daya, you know. That's happening now. So I don't know what will happen if El Nino is will be coming in Malaysia in June, but. We can look back in the history, you know, in 2016, yeah, there are losses. Yeah, in Perak alone, the losses is 56 million, 56 million ringgit in the Krian district because of El Nino. What happened is El Nino will increase here in Malaysia, yeah, will increase the temperature until 2 degrees Celsius, is it correct? 2 degrees Celsius, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, rainfall will reduce to 60%. Yeah. So, in general, the optimum temperature for rice cultivation is between 24 to 34 degrees Celsius. So, the annual rainfall should exceed 2,000 millimeter. So. You know, a research by IRI in Philippines, International Rice Research Institute, shows, you know, the increase of temperatures, 1 degree will reduce rice yield about 10%. So we can already expect what will happen. So we can expect lower yield from our rice farmers during this time of El Nino.
So then really, Amir, it's already we're seeing so much impact from a lot of the climate change related changes on farmers now. And then on top of that, if we have El Nino this year, they'll be even further impacted. Are these smaller farmers struggling more to adapt compared to bigger industry players from what you've seen?
You know, I think the smaller farmers actually, they are more resilient from the bigger player, from the companies, you know. The companies actually, you know, they need to meeting, they need to decide. The farmers, you know, they can adapt because they are individual. Yeah?
They can decide immediately.
They have been farming for centuries. You know, their grandfather, their great-great-grandfather, so they know. Yeah? So they are the one who notice these differences. In fact, scientists is actually get information from these farmers.
Yes.
The scientist actually doesn't know. They doesn't know what happening in the field. No, they just do the analysis and then they just do report. Yeah. So what is important is actually we need to empower our farmers. Actually, they know what to do. You know, one thing that the government should do to reduce the impact of El Nino is actually to give more freedom to farmers, actually, to choose their own seed variety. Because in dealing with climate, the thing that we need to do is to adapt. So how to adapt is to choose the varieties that can adapt a drop and can adapt high temperature. Yeah. So the other thing is multi-cropping. Yeah. So multi-cropping or diversity in one's farm is actually important. Yeah, because if you got multiple variety in one area, so one variety might not stand the 1 degree increase in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Then another variety might stand. You know, so you get a multiple fortress actually. So it's not if you do a monocropping, you know, it's just one variety. So if that variety cannot stand the heat, it will all die. You know, and then our production will be, you know, at that particular place, it will become zero. Mm. So we've got multiple variety in one area. So we got multiple, what do you call it? Macam fortress lah. Eh? So it's try and error. So which variety is actually could stand El Nino?
Amit, do you want to talk a bit about that? Because I think people might not be aware about the ability to choose the seed variety when it comes to farming. You know, is that something that's up to the farmers to decide what they want to plant or not?
Yeah, because like in paddy, yeah. So the variety of seeds sold to farmers is actually produced by a limited numbers of companies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the seed varieties approved by the government for the subsidy scheme. Eh?
Mm.
So the subsidy is actually given to the company. It's not given to the farmers. It's given to the company. So the company will produce. So my research, I've done some research. Eh? At a particular place, farmers actually can choose just around 2 variety or 4 variety.
Mm.
You know, at one particular place. Usually, the varieties sold in the market is not because of whether it is climate tolerant or not.
Mm.
It is because of the how much profit margin the company can get from that variety. You know, like the CL, the CL variety.
Mm-hmm.
We got one type of variety here, vastly marketed by the companies is MR220CL2. Mm-hmm. So this variety is actually need to be used with in package with the particular pesticide, eh? herbicide. Mm. So if you want to buy this seed, you also need to buy this particular herbicide.
Mm.
So the seller, of course, will got a higher profit margin. So they will sell that variety more than other varieties. Lah. So instead of doing that, so we suggest that the subsidy is given to farmers. So when the subsidy is given to farmers and the license is opened up to more companies to produce seed varieties, even the Farmers Association, we should offer Farmers Association to also to produce seed varieties. Then the farmers can decide, you know, what varieties they need on their land. Because not every area in Malaysia is the same, you know.
Mm.
Some area needs this type of variety, some area need this type of variety. And also, we need to encourage farmers to actually save, share and sell.
Mm-hmm.
So farmers actually should have the freedom to save seed, to share seed and to sell the seed that they have processed, you know, to other farmers. So this is actually, when we do this, it actually will help the agro-biodiversities in the field, yeah, to overcome climate changes.
So essentially, you want to see policies that help farmers directly, right? Not go to some other actors and indirectly help farmers, because that in like what you mentioned, Amir, sometimes it doesn't benefit farmers because they are not left with much choice.
Yeah, freedom is important. Yeah, freedom is important for farmers, because you can see farmers is the only occupation where, you know, people decide for you. You know, even the price. Mamas does not decide the price, no? The wholesaler decide the price.
Mm.
You know, if you want to buy a smartphone, for example, or clothes, no? Who decide the price?
The seller decides the price.
The seller will decide the price, no? But the farmers, you know, they are not the one who decide the price. You know, we should empower farmers actually to become the seller themselves. So farmers actually should have the freedom to form companies or to form association, you know. So they should be given license to process rice, to market rice of their own brand, you know. So this is happening in Japan. This mm-hmm. is happening in Korea. So it should also happening in Malaysia, where farmers actually own the harvest and they process and they sell. So this is more profitable for them actually.
Mm. And really, we have no shortage when it comes to biodiversity, even in agriculture, isn't it? We have so many types of specialty rice. So why not grow that industry and market it better?
Yeah, in the record, it's actually the approved variety. So in Malaysia, there are a lot of variety. You know, like the land races. The land races, the traditional varieties.
Mm.
It's not modern varieties. So there are also modern varieties produced by research institutions, by universities, also mm-hmm. by MARDIS. So the modern varieties introduced by this research institution, until 2021, we got, if I'm not mistaken, a 52 variety, 52, yeah, from 1964
mm-hmm.
Until 2021. You know, the latest one is IS21,
mm-hmm.
produced by Malaysian Nuclear Agency, yeah. So we got a lot of these choices. Actually, you know, if you want to choose varieties that can stand kemarau, drought, yeah, there are quite a lot of varieties mentioned by MARDI, MRQ74, MRQ76, MR219, MR284, Siraj 297, 303, 307. So all these varieties actually quite tolerant to heat. You know, so this variety should be released to farmers, you know, to be given to farmers to plant, yeah, to be planted.
All right, we do have to go for another very quick break, and we'll continue this discussion when we come back. On the show with me today is Nurfitri Amir Mohammed, researcher and coordinator with the Malaysia Food Sovereignty Forum, and we are discussing food security and food sovereignty here in Malaysia. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after another quick break on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Nurfitri Amir Mohammed, researcher and coordinator with the Malaysia Food Sovereignty Forum, is joining me on Zoom today to discuss food security in Malaysia and also the impact of climate change and in particular El Nino on our agricultural sector, on how farmers are able to adapt to the weather changes so that their crops aren't impacted or unimpacted as much. Because as we've seen in the past, erratic weather changes can cause significant losses to this industry. Now, Amir, I want to talk a bit about the industry, right? Traditionally, agriculture farming is seen as hard labor. Do you see more interest or less interest among the younger generation in wanting to venture into this industry because of the perception of it as hard labor?
You know, farmers are actually entrepreneurs. You know? They are their own boss. You know, they got no boss now. Entrepreneurs, when there are opportunities, when the market is good,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you can do business, you don't have, government doesn't need to give subsidy lah. Everybody will do it.
Mm.
You know, look at durian lah, durian. You know, you know, nah, there are no subsidy for durian lah, except for government's classes, you know, the Jabatan Pertanian punya kursus dan sebagainya. Eh.
Mm.
But there are a lot of invention, you know, innovation by farmers. You can see, you know, this type of farmers use this type, this technique, this type of farmers in Penang, there are different technique, you know, modern technique, traditional technique. So my point is, if the government can ensure the market is suitable, yeah, for farmers to sell their produce, everybody will go in, you know, everybody want to make money, you know.
Mm.
It will be easier, you know. So the problem is, you know, I give you an example of the chili industry. So chili is, I noticed chili is one of the niche that quite successful. The Jabatan Pertanian and also all the government agencies, they always promote young farmers to plant chili, you know, all type of technique lah, fertigation lah, organic lah. Eh? But at the end, other agencies in the government allow imported chilies to be imported, imported chilies to come in lah. So now, we got excess number of imported chilies, and the price has been reduced, you know. So six of my friends in Kedah already stopped producing chilies, you know. So one here, one in Perak. So this is just people around me, you know, seven people that's previously planting chilies. They're successful, but they cannot stand on the price, you know. The price is really low. So they are entrepreneurs, you know. They try so many things to increase their production of chilies, you know. But if the market is not protected, then nobody will be interested to, you know, the risk is too high. The risk is too high, you know. So my suggestion is, you know, our suggestion is actually governments need to control on the import part, you know, because until our farmers is big enough to compete, you know, because this is what other countries doing. Do you think the American do not protect the farmers? You know, do you think the European do not protect the farmers? You know, do you think their ban on our palm oil is nothing to do with protecting their farmers, their vegetables oil farmers, you know? They are, you know, it's naive lah if you not think So what government should do first is to liberalize the input segment. The input segment is the seed, you know, the fertilizer, pesticide, herbicide. So this is all the input segment. And at the other end, is to tighter the control on import. So if we done this, actually, we can help farmers to reduce their costs because the liberalization of the inputs, you know. And we can help farmers to market their produce lah. We need some quota lah for the market lah, for the local market lah. Just like our car market lah. Yes.
So then, with this in mind, you know, if the government is able to implement these sort of measures, ideally, where do you want to see Malaysia be when it in becoming a more food secure nation? You know, do we need to improve our production? Do we need to improve when it comes to affordability of products? What does an ideal situation of food security in Malaysia look like to you?
All right. So food security, like I said before, there are few type of school of thought in food security. So we need to look at the correct one. Yeah? The correct one should be the self-sufficient. I mean, we should be self-sufficient. Not food secure by importing other countries' foods, because, you know, look at Singapore. You know, during the COVID time, or during our shortage of chicken, when Malaysia, you know, banned export of chicken, look what happened to their, you know, Bising. So it's not all good lah. Yeah. So I mean, the policy that the Singapore takes for their food security is suitable for them as an island nation. So we are different because we are not an island nation. We got a lot of land. Yeah? So we should look at self-sufficient level. And then we should not just look at food security because food security, because the definition of food security is it is in the point of view of consumer. You know, the affordability, accessibility, nutrition, it is at the point of view of consumer. So we need to go higher at the point of view, also point of view of the farmers. So when we talk about a point of view of farmers, we should have another level talking about food, which is food sovereignty. Food sovereignty is actually we aware, you know, where the fruits come from. So it is not, it must not come from cheap labor. Mm. I mean, even though the consumer happily consume enough foods, but it should not because of the hard labor of our farmers, so that our farmers remain poor.
Mm.
It should not be like that. No? So the consumer should get, should pay their part also to help farmers, you know, to help farmers to have decent income. So this is what the sovereignty is. So we should focus on the local supply chain. We should treat farmers as our partners, yeah.
Mm.
In the nation buildings, we should acknowledge their knowledge, you know, the farmers' knowledge, traditional knowledge,
mm.
and we should give more importance to food for agriculture for food. You're not agriculture for something else like, you know, biofuel, you know, not palm oil. Palm oil is also agriculture.
Mm.
Rubber is also agriculture, you know. So we should focus agriculture for food, not for cars, you know, not for industry. Mm. So farmers should plant food, agriculture, plant for us to eat. So this is the concept that we need to tell our consumer. It's not just you. It's not just you have enough food. You should also think of the farmers. They should have better price also.
Hmm. So then to finish our discussion on that note, Amir, you know, what can we as individuals do to support local farmers? How can we improve what we're doing?
Yeah, first of all, do you eat local rice or imported rice?
So
we should actually support our local rice, local rice and vegetable. I know some of us, you know, when we get extra money, we tend to buy imported rice because our thinking, you know, our thinking is that imported rice is better, you know. But it's not all, this not, it's not the case actually. The rice is the same.
Mm.
In fact, if you buy imported rice, that rice is much older, you know, than our local rice, you know. Considering the time it takes to export by ships, you know, how many months, you know. So the rice that you eat, the imported rice that you eat, has been harvested maybe last year. You know, if you buy local rice, you know, it is just, you know, the same season, you know, maybe the early season, you know, the last season. You should support local products, you know, buy local rice, buy local vegetables. And if you got space, you need to plant something edible, you know, even in pots, you know. And you should reach your member of parliament, you know, ask them to support farmers' rights. You know, there are a lot of rules, you know, there are a lot of acts, you know, that's control farmers, you know. For example, there are also there is a proposal, yeah, to amend the Plant Variety Protection Act 2004, protection of new plant variety 2004, PNVP 2004. So that it's in line with the UPOF Convention 1991, you know. This is actually not supporting farmers' rights, because this convention, UPOF 1991 convention, will limit the right of farmers to save, share and sell seeds. So we need to reach our MPs. They need to understand more. They need to have awareness on farmers' rights. And they need to oppose, you know, if all this nonsense acts being tabled in the parliament.
All right, a lot of things that people can actively do, you know, from supporting your local farmers to reaching out to your MPs to get them to do something about this. Thank you so much for joining me today, Amir.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Nur Fitri Amir Mohamed, researcher and coordinator of Malaysia Food Sovereignty Forum, also known as Forum Kedaulatan Makanan Malaysia, or FKMM. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcasts on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suen, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.